The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
This is the Ben Burnett Show, the only show in America that features a one-term has-been retired politician that nobody knows.
Welcome into the Ben Burnett Show. My name is Ben Burnett. My guest today is the Attorney General of the state of Georgia, Chris Carr. Chris, welcome in.
Ben, wonderful to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for making the long trek. You find a lot of people running for statewide office that live in Thomasville or Tifton or Ocilla or Watkinsville, and you are the pride of Marist High School from right here in Dunwoody. So we don't get a lot of Metro Atlanta people going the statewide route. Don't forget Jackson with my buddy Burt Jones. We don't get a lot of people that are like inside 285 ready to just take it on. So I'm going to have a good experience talking with you about being what we define now as a Metro Atlanta Republican.
I appreciate it. Just a hair outside the perimeter. North of Perimeter Mall.
I thought I had one. We're still on the search for the
first. Gotta be honest.
We're still on the search for the first statewide inside the perimeter Republican. Well, Chris, where'd you grow up?
So actually, I was born in Michigan. Moved down here in 78 when I was in kindergarten and went to Shalaford Elementary and then Marist High School. And when I graduated Marist, went to Georgia undergrad and Georgia Law. Double dog, they say.
They do say double dog. What are you – and so Jared Thomas is a mutual friend of ours, and he said, you know what you're really going to like about Chris was that he decided he wanted to be a lawyer, and then he decided – that he wanted to maybe do other things because being a lawyer may have been something that I had to evaluate. When you got out of school, law school, what'd you do?
Well, so between undergrad and law school, actually I worked for a bit with Georgia Pacific. So I was in the sales side of things. But I'd gotten to know a guy named Kevin Isaacson when I was at Georgia. And I always loved politics. So while I was at Georgia Pacific, Johnny ran for the U.S. Senate in 96. He ended up losing that race, and I went to law school. But stayed close to him. I actually got a job with Alston & Byrd, a great firm in Atlanta, and practiced there for a while, but really liked the elective politics side of things, the policy side of things, and had gotten to know a guy named Rogers Wade, who was the president of the Georgia Public Policy Foundation, which is a conservative think tank here in Georgia. And I went over there for a couple of years as vice president and general counsel. But in 2002, Isaacson, who had won Newt Gingrich's seat for the House, decided he was going to run for the Senate, and I was asked to come over as campaign manager. And that's how I kind of got into Isaacson's world, was practicing law for a little bit, public policy think tank, and then getting into his world.
I want to ask you about that because Washington, D.C. is a fascinating place, for better and for worse. but he is somebody that on both sides of the aisle, people just – he's a Mount Rushmore of the state of Georgia figure. What was running his campaign like?
Well, first of all, I mean, again, Johnny was not just a boss. I mean, he was a friend. He was a mentor. And I probably learned more about business, politics, and just being a good human being from Johnny. He was well known. He had run for – he'd been in the state house. He'd been in the state senate. He'd run for governor. Then he ends up in the U.S. House and when Newt stepped down, and then he decided to run when Zell Miller decided to step down. He'd be in the Senate. It was an unbelievable experience, one, because of Johnny and just how he did things and the experience that he had. And he always had this theory, they're friends and future friends.
I've heard it from everybody.
Yeah, friends and future friends. And he was well-respected, a conservative, but well-respected by everybody. That's not to say he didn't have his challenges while he was in office, and by the time he was at the end of his career, I mean, literally, he's the only person I know that when he stepped down in 2019 could get 100 senators to agree to anything, and that was to come to a lunch in his honor. And the speeches that were given, people were lining up for 2 and 3 days. It was great. But he had a great team, too. I mean, Johnny's philosophy was just literally you had to vote the right way or you lose a constituent, and you had to treat people the right way from a constituent services perspective, which goes back to his time as a realtor, just treating people well. And he still, at the end of his career, saw politics, elective politics, as a high and noble calling. And he was seeing a lot, you know, he's seen a ton in his career. But he truly believes you got to have good people that are willing to run for office.
So I've, probably 2 years ago, I had a gentleman, David Chatham, come on my podcast. And their families are synonymous with one another in residential real estate in Atlanta.
And if one you ever, built and one sold.
One of them built and one of them sold. And now one of them builds and sells.
Yeah, that's right.
and the things, just to hear, if you ask me, and go listen to it, because David Chatham is a, if you live in Atlanta, the odds are probably around 5 or 6 or 7% that he built your house. But the regal nature of how he talked about their family's relationships was really remarkable. And that is a gentleman who has an immense amount of success that does not ever care about the spotlight or anybody knowing who he is. If you needed something when I was on the city council in Alpharetta, he'd figure out how to make anything work that was for the good of a community where one of his neighborhoods were, even after he had sold all the houses. When you transition and Senator Isaacson becomes Senator Isaacson, what was your role on his team?
So I went to D.C. as deputy chief of staff. So I spent 3 years up there really kind of getting to know the policy side of things, getting to understand the Senate. And it was a great experience because, again, I'd been down here on the campaign side, knew the Georgia piece, for lack of a better word, worked with grassroots.
Not the same thing.
No, and it's different. And, you know, it's different being in the House and in the Senate as well. And then there was the piece of Johnny and Saxby Chambliss working together, too. Not just because the two of them knew each other going back to Georgia and they had a friendship, but the relationship between the offices was fantastic. And you didn't see that. Even if you had two senators of the same party, that could oftentimes be more competition for press or whatever it may be. But that's not the case for us. So for 3 years, I was deputy chief of staff. Then when my predecessor, Heath Garrett, Heath had been with Johnny, worked on his governor's race in 90, then managed his campaign in 96, and then all of his House campaigns in our first Senate. He was chief of staff for the first 3 years. Then he went to the private sector, and then I became chief of staff then. And I moved back here in 08, and I commuted back and forth to Washington. So every Tuesday, get on a plane. Every Friday that we were in session, come back. But again, Johnny's theory was, you know, this is a representative republic, and you can only represent the people if you know, if you go to the grocery store, if you go to the hardware store and the gas station, which he did every week. So he came home every week as well. So oftentimes it was wherever he was, I'd be.
As you come back here, in 08 and then moving out of his office, how did you, was there a reflection period of like, what do I want to be when I grow up? You're probably still having that. I think we all do to some degree, but did you have to take some time and figure out really what you wanted to do, where you wanted to take a professional career? What was the thought process that went into Chris Carr coming out of a chief of staff role?
That's a great question.
Have you had that one yet?
Yeah, no, I hadn't had it. Which is a good one.
I got one.
So I'm commuting every week. I did it for about 5.5 years. Well, I had a daughter that was, she was born in 04. And so let's say, so this was 13. So she's 7, 8, 9 as I'm getting on the plane. Getting harder and harder.
Yep, I've heard Chip Lake say the same thing working for Congressman Westmoreland.
That's really the thing to me, number one. And number two, when you start looking at the period of time, it was the Obama years. And it was getting harder and harder to get things accomplished in the Senate. And so to go up every week and then we weren't doing much, it was having a daughter that was growing older and then feeling frustrated that we weren't getting much done. I just decided it was probably time to move on. And I'll never forget, Johnny and I actually sat at the Silver Skillet in 2013, and I said, you know, we got to start thinking about your reelect and going into cycle. And I said, we probably got to do it without me here, but before I go look for something else, I don't want you to think I'm fishing in somebody else's pond. You've been so good to me. We probably ought to talk. And it was tough.
I'm sure.
It was
That's
tough.
A big part of your life.
And again, not just because he was it was professional, but, I mean, again, Johnny was a friend, and he was a mentor. And so once, you know, we did that, and he recognized, you know, kind of where we were going and that sort of thing. Then I got a call from Chris Comiskey, who had been on our staff, had been our state director. Well, he was the commissioner of economic development for Governor Deal. Well, Governor Deal's chief of staff, Chris Riley, and I had been in Leadership Georgia together. Comiskey calls and says, hey, I'm going to go to the private sector. Do you think you might be interested in this job? And I said, actually, I think I might. Chris Riley called me up and said, are you serious? I said, I am. He said, well, let's talk about it. And it worked out great. And then I went to work for Governor Deal.
As you spend time in his office, what really got you interested in, well, let's call it, for the sake of the argument, not the United States Senate. Everything looks local compared to somewhere, right?
That's right.
Because if I sat on the city council in Alpharetta and I think about an attorney general's role, I'd be like, man, that's like a whole different world. But it has far more in common with your local politics than it does necessarily. You may go fight Washington, D.C. on certain things, but I think the vast majority of what you guys do and look for the betterment of the people of actually where you live, where you happen to lay your head 5 nights or 7 nights a week.
That's right. So as the attorney general is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what's interesting is, so again, I step back, look at the 50,000 foot level. It's my duty as the attorney general to defend the Constitution of the United States, Constitution and laws of the state of Georgia, and represent the interests of the people of this state. So, yes, on a day-to-day basis, you really are, you're the lawyer for the executive branch of state government. So any of the agencies, boards, and authorities that comprise state government, Department of Natural Resources, Driver Services, any of the boards, doctor's board or dental board, whatever it may be. So you're representing those folks on a day-to-day basis. But going back to the Washington experience, but what you are seeing now more and more is state AGs getting involved in federal issues. And why is that? Well, again, having seen it, if Congress isn't going to do its job, being the first among equals, if it's not going to get anything done, well, nature abhors a vacuum. That vacuum at the federal level will be filled by the executive branch through executive order and through regulation. So they will start filling the gap that Congress should be doing. And then what happens in our federal system becomes the state's job to push back. If Congress isn't going to do it, it's up to the state. So it could either be the governors or the AGs. The AGs are in the best position as the chief legal officers of
America. You're better lawyer than Governor Kemp.
Right? He's not a lawyer, and so I'm grateful.
I hope so.
I'm grateful that we have the relationship that we do. But what you see, again, is this pushback. And you saw it during the Obama years with Republicans that push back. You saw it in the Trump years when the Democrats push back. And now you're seeing it again with Republicans and the Biden administration.
Is that something that changed? Was that more the tail end of your office in tail end of your time working in Senator Isaacson's office? You probably saw it just a little bit.
Yeah.
Is that something that is just transformationally different in 2022?
Completely. And if you look at the role of the AG, look, going back in history, oftentimes the AG was the lawyer for the governor and for the state.
Right.
More in the shadows, not doing as much politically. But we're subject, you know, look, we're subject to elected politics just like everybody else. And as the world has gotten more partisan, so has the world of AGs. As the world has gotten more philosophically different, so has the world of AGs. And you are seeing a big difference right now. And then the other thing, too, again, going back to Isaacson or Deal, who, again, both of which I'm so fortunate I got to work with, guys that were the most successful politicians who didn't like the politics of politics.
Right.
They just wanted to get it done, could work with anybody. Well, we're now in a world, and I don't know when it happened, somewhere along the way, we Republicans and Democrats went from political opponents to political enemies. And when that changed, everything changed. So AGs are all caught up in the same political winds as everybody else, and so you're seeing it a lot differently.
Having sat in the office for 6 years, first two being appointed, and then you run for re-election, do you get incumbent status when you run the first time or
yeah,
no?
Yeah, I did.
You did.
Yeah.
What What are your goals and objectives, and what battles do you fight on a daily basis that your average people know about and your average people don't know about?
Sure. I think there's a couple things. One is kind of the traditional role of the office, which is providing legal advice to those agencies, boards, and authorities. So let me just give you an example. We have 150 lawyers in-house. Huh. We have 150 professionals that are auditors and investigators, human resources folks. So 300 in-house. We also hire 200 to 300 lawyers that are private practitioners that we call special assistant attorneys general. Now, that's if we have a geographic or subject matter need. The water wars against Florida, you need specialty. But most often, it's Department of Transportation and it's defects and child support. So again, we have 50 judicial circuits, 159 counties around the state. We need some help across the board. So we're 500 to 600 people. Give you a comparison. Each state crafts their AG differently based on the Constitution. Texas will tell you they're a little bit bigger than we are. I'm told that they have 3,000 lawyers and 1,500 support staff. So it's a little bit different. So you see kind of what we do. So the traditional role is providing that legal advice. 21 to 22,000 matters on any, you know, given day that we can be responsible for. But what we've also now seen is, again, crime and public safety is a major issue. The way we've done it in the state constitutionally is, generally speaking, DAs and solicitors, if a county has it or a judicial circuit has it, have been responsible for misdemeanors and felonies. But now the state has given us authority in places that make sense, like human trafficking, like gang prosecution, where criminals don't care what the city or the county line is. It makes more sense for us to do it. So those are the two areas. I've really tried to focus more on the, not more on, but in addition to human trafficking and gang prosecutions now and elder abuse as we kind of go into that phase as well.
And most of that I wouldn't imagine is partisan, but yet it probably becomes so every day.
Shouldn't be. I mean, again, whether it's human trafficking, whether it's violent crime, it shouldn't be Republican, Democrat, or independent. That's a fundamental human need. In fact, Georgia's Constitution says it is the paramount duty of government to protect person and property. So as I've said with gang prosecutions, for example, 60 to 90% of all violent crime is gang affiliated. Who are the communities most often terrorized by gangs? Lower income, racially diverse, and immigrant populations. All Georgians deserve to be safe, whether you live in Southwest Georgia, Southwest Atlanta, Buckhead, Blairsville. This is fundamental. It's not a partisan issue. It's simply a human issue. Everyone wants a safe school, safe community. They want their business. They want to be able to provide for their family. That's all we're trying to do.
I want to ask you real quick, with respect to 2020 and the election that took place, which I'm sure you have been asked about at least 5,000 times, probably in 2020 alone. And I have had the episode that comes out tomorrow, which I really hate when I do this because I'll have you next week, has Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, who has his own legal counsel in certain instances, but there was no way you were not getting interwoven into that magic show. What was 2020 like for you as the lawyer for the state of Georgia? I'm not going to ask you political questions. I want to ask you about life.
Sure.
Living then.
Well, I think a couple things. One is I try to remind everybody, look, I'm a Republican. I wanted my team to win. But we didn't lose for the reasons that a lot of people were saying that we were. You know, one of the things that I've reminded everybody, there's an election every year somewhere in the nation, probably in this state, when you talk about municipal elections. And with every election, more than 50% of the people that run lose. It happens all the time. But we've gotten ourselves into this position over the last few years where we have to blame somebody. Hillary Clinton blamed the Russians. We know it wasn't the Russians. Stacey Abrams blamed voter suppression. 2 weeks ago, a federal judge threw out the remaining claims that she had that said it just didn't happen. And I'm just here to tell you, there's not one single Georgian who was eligible to vote in 2018 that was prohibited from voting. And the federal judge found that as well. And then our team said in 2020 we lost because of voter fraud. And I'm just telling you, there's not evidence of widespread voter fraud such that it would overturn the election. But what had happened is we now have a crisis of confidence in our elections.
Yep.
So we passed SB 202 because Democrats in 18 complained about voter suppression or long lines or boards that weren't doing what they're supposed to do. Our team did the same thing, only over voter fraud and long lines and that sort of thing. SB 202 came together and addressed a lot of those issues, focusing on security, access, and transparency. And now, again, the Biden administration has been weaponized, literally took all the campaign statements that Stacey Abrams said and put it into a lawsuit. And now we know that wasn't true because the federal judge just threw it out. But we're still having to defend it. It was tough because, again, I'm a Republican, been a lifelong Republican. My mom, I was told you I was born in Michigan. My mom tells the story. The morning after the election, 1976, Ford Carter, Ford's from Michigan. My family's Republican. She says, I asked who won the election. She said, Jimmy Carter. She says, I burst into tears. I was at the Tate Center in 1992 when Al Gore showed up with all the Democrats in the state, and there's like six or seven of us holding George H.W. Bush signs. Worked for Isaacson going back to 1996. I'm a Republican through and through. It was a difficult period of time, but we did it the right way. We went to court 16 times based on fact and evidence, which is what you have to do in my job, and we prevailed 16 times.
I was going
to
say,
what I wanted.
And you haven't lost yet.
No, we haven't. And again, politically, I wanted my team to win, but we didn't lose for the reasons that we were saying.
When you look at the issues that really face the state of Georgia as the, I won't say the CEO, but the CEO in the lawyer's office over the course of the next 4 years, like, what do you envision? What would you like to change? Change may be the wrong word. What would you like to see altered? What are the things coming up that people need to be paying attention about? Because if you listen to my show, it's because you love the game. And that's why, you know, you could get you on a 30-second commercial and you're like, I like guns, I like unborn kids, and I like the governor, and here's my American flag and my shotgun. But so much of what you do has an immense amount of depth. And candidly, when I had Tyler Harper on, I feel like I know more about agriculture, even though I've never been a farmer, than I know about being the top lawyer in the state of Georgia to represent me in law school. In lawsuits, because I sure as hell have never been to law school. But what do you see those issues coming forward that you want to address through the General Assembly, and what makes you the right pick for the job for the next 4 years?
Well, it's a great question because, again, we're getting asked right now during the campaign different questions about, you know, what's my personal opinion on this or personal opinion on that. Well, my personal opinion is irrelevant to be the Attorney General, because our job is to uphold the laws that are duly passed by the legislature and signed by the governor. Can we go back to the legislature? Sure. We did it with gangs. We've done it with human trafficking. Again, I think the issues that we need to focus on over the next 4 years are the economy and crime. And then there is a philosophical difference, as you see, again, kind of around the country for how different states do things. And I think we should be proud of the way that our state has done it. But again, the first thing I'm going to focus on is the Human Trafficking and Prosecutions Unit. We just got those up and running. We got more we've got to do. One of the areas, and I just saw the governor released his public safety agenda for the next term for him, and that includes recruiting children into gangs. We are seeing more and more adults that are recruiting children as young as the fourth grade because they don't think the police are going to arrest them if they're carrying a gun or cash or whatever it may be. That's an area we want to shore up. We want to continue to shore up human trafficking. Organized retail crime. This is the smash and grabs you've probably seen from around the country.
California, man.
You've got it. You've seen it.
It's unbelievable.
It's crazy, but what it usually is may not be a named gang, but it's an organized crime syndicate going out stealing from retail and trying to sell online or elsewhere. This is an area that we can focus on. We've put together a task force. So I'm going to continue to do that. But also, you know, again, there is a difference. There's a lot of reasons we're the number one state in the nation in which to do business now 9 years running. I mean, it's because of our ports of Savannah and Brunswick, Hartsfield, because we've got a great university system, technical college system, logistics, you name it. But it's also because we have a predictable legal and regulatory environment. And in this state, we don't see business as the enemy. We see the power of the free enterprise system. And I tell a story. A general counsel for a company came in, spoke to some Republican AGs a couple years ago, said, you know, it's just different focusing or dealing with you guys than folks on the other side, and here's why. He said, I got into a meeting with an AG on the other side of the aisle, got 30 seconds into this why I was there. The AG puts his hand up, said, let me just stop you. Let me tell you where I'm coming from. I believe all business is created evil, E-V-I-L. Well, I didn't know how we do it in Georgia. There's a reason people are moving here. There's a reason people moved here post-pandemic, because they were tired of their business being shut down. They were tired of their restaurant being shut down. They were tired of mask mandates. They were tired of their schools being closed. And so folks, they're moving here for business opportunities, but also because of an opportunity to for a good quality of life. I want to continue to make sure that Georgia is that great place to do business, to live, to work, to play, to visit. Tourism's a big issue. Look, we've got a lot going on in this state.
As we close, I want to ask, like, when you look down the road and you see, I don't imagine you're moving anytime soon. I feel like if you've gone to undergrad, you've gone to law school, you sat as the attorney general for 6 years. What's out there that you really want to do that you're not able to do in elected office? Like, what's the thing that Chris Carr is like, you know what, when I get the chance to do that, I'm going to do it. And don't tell me, like, fishing in Alaska.
I was about to say take a vacation, but I won't say it. You know, it's a good question, and I think there are still things that I like the elective politics because, again, I saw it from Isaacson and Deal's perspective, and we are a growing state. There's a lot, again, that's going on in the state of Georgia. I think I would like to continue to see what we can accomplish in this form or fashion, and don't have any intention of going anywhere else for a while, and we'll just see where this goes. But again, you know, there's that old saying, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. That's why I don't want to look too far down the road.
I didn't know if you were going to be on Deadliest Catch or, you know, get out there and really have a changing career path.
Maybe get on the senior PGA Tour, but I've got a long way to go before I can do that.
Well, Attorney General Chris Carr, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be with you, my friend.
It has been another episode of the Ben Burnett Show. Have a great day, everybody. When it comes to building your business, no one knows it quite like you, but taking the next step to innovate it, grow it, expand it, that takes a special kind of know-how. The First Horizon Commercial Banking team in Atlanta brings a depth of experience and insights that builds on the bank's deep balance sheet capabilities. So you don't have to choose between building a bank that knows how to optimize your growth strategies and one that is fully equipped to help you execute every part of them. Visit firsthorizon.com to find a banker near you.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
When you buy a used car, don't be taken for a ride. Get Ford Blue Advantage certified at Wade Ford, Atlanta's headquarters for factory-certified pre-owned vehicles. Go to wadeford.com. There you'll find a great selection of Ford Blue Advantage certified used cars, trucks, and SUVs. With Blue certified, nearly all makes and all models are in stock now. You'll find something perfect for just about any budget. Buy with confidence at the Wade Ford factory-certified used car outlet at wadeford.com. Wade Ford. We are Atlanta's Ford dealer.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.